with a fire extinguisher, were killed during the chaotic siege in which law enforcement was overwhelmed. The news outlet reported, more than 130 people have been charged by federal prosecutors for their roles in a riot. In recent weeks, others have been arrested after posting threats against members of Congress. They include a Proud Boys supporter who, authorities said, threatened to deploy 3 cars full of armed patriots to Washington, threatened harm against Senator Raphael Warnock, and who is accused of stockpiling military-style combat knives and more than 1,000 rifle rounds in his New York home. A Texas man was arrested this week for taking part in the riot at the Capitol and for posting violent threats, including a call to assassinate Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This dangerous context has led some to suggest that the Senate's upcoming vote on whether to convict Trump should be concluded via a secret ballot. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich explained that doing so will protect the safety of senators and allow them to vote their conscientious. If Republican senators had integrity and if Trump supporters were peaceful, this couldn't be necessary, Reich added. But they're not, and they're not. So a secret ballot offers a better chance of convicting Trump and ensuring he will never again be president.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, do not dwell on the past. Brothers and sisters, do not dwell in the past. Do not dream of the future. Concentrate the mind on the present moment. It can be frustrating when you think what you used to have, where you want to be, and where you actually are now. But what we really have to concentrate on is what we have to do right now, today, and every day going forward to get us to where we want to be. We have to write down our dreams to turn them into goals, and then do the things we need to do on a daily basis to achieve our goals and turn our dreams into reality. Now, we have two types of extremes. One of those extremes is that is always concerned about their future. They're not so much concerned about their present. Okay? They're just, you know, thinking about their future, building castles in the air. Their wish list is never ending. And they're like, okay, in 5 years, this is where I'm gonna be. But when you look at their present, they're not working towards those goals that they have defined for themselves. The other extreme of people is people who get stuck in the past. They keep regretting over the mistakes they have made in the past. Well, sometimes we all make mistakes. Sometimes we all miss out on opportunities. Fine, you missed out an opportunity, but think about how you can compensate for that. Think about how you can fix that. Think about how you can today, in this present moment, do something that is going to take you out of that state, out of that condition. This is how a believer thinks. A believer is positive in their actions and in their thoughts. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing not to dwell on the past. What it really means is like not get stuck in the past, okay? You don't have to do anything new to become your creative self. This is already your essential nature. You only need to give it the outlet it always seeks in the present moment. So try to live in the present. Yes, keep an eye on your past, the mistakes you have done. Do not repeat them. Compensate for them. Fix them. Whatever can be done to improve that situation. That in its own place. But then, you should be concerned about your present. How your present is shaping. God forbid your mistakes are being repeated. You're just, you know, doing the same thing all over again. This is something that Islam expects you to be watchful about. Then also, when it comes to your future, don't worry too much about your future. Yeah, have defined goals and work towards those goals. But future is not something that is in our controls. So anything and everything that we can do today is what you're responsible for. Letting go of our resistance to being creative and spontaneous often comes down to releasing our self-limiting beliefs and attitudes of low expectations. Such beliefs could be that you are not a creative person or that you don't deserve joy, love, and fulfillment. Brothers and sisters, remember, try not to become a man of success, but rather try to become a man of value. Your life should have value. Okay? So, again, a reminder, do not get stuck in the past. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
The European Union has threatened to block exports of coronavirus vaccines to countries outside the European bloc, countries such as Britain, after AstraZeneca was accused of failing to give a satisfactory explanation for a huge shortfall of promised doses to member states. The pharmaceutical company's new distribution plans were said to be unacceptable after it surprisingly informed the European Commission on Friday, 22nd of January, that there would be significant shortfalls on the original schedule. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Danielle Buffy. The piece is titled, European Union Threatens to Block COVID Vaccine Exports Amid AstraZeneca Shortfall. Stay with us for more of Danielle Buffy's article. The European Union has threatened to block exports of coronavirus vaccines to countries outside the European bloc, countries such as Britain, after AstraZeneca was accused of failing to give a satisfactory explanation for a huge shortfall of promised doses to European member states. The pharmaceutical company's new distribution plans were said to be unacceptable after it surprisingly informed the European Commission on Friday, 22nd of January, that there would be significant shortfalls on the original schedule. The European Union has been due to receive 100 million doses of the vaccine in the first quarter of this year, but it is feared that the bloc will only receive half of that despite making large advance purchases ahead of authorization of the vaccine by the European Medicines Agency. In a heated telephone conversation with AstraZeneca's chief executive, Pascal Soriot, on Monday, the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the company must live up to its contractual obligations. The European Medicines Agency is expected to authorize the AstraZeneca vaccine by the end of this week. Ursula von der Leyen's spokesperson said she made it clear that she expects AstraZeneca to deliver on the contractual arrangements foreseen in the advance purchasing agreement. She reminded Pascal Soriot that the European Union has invested significant amounts in the company up front precisely to ensure that production is ramped up even before the conditional market authorization is delivered by the European Medicines Agency. Of course, production issues can appear with the complex vaccine, but we expect the company to find solutions and to exploit all possible flexibilities to deliver swiftly. The European Union's Health Commissioner, Stella Kyriakides, made a televised statement to express her frustration at the company's behavior, warning that the answers so far provided by AstraZeneca had not been satisfactory. Late on Monday evening, 25th of January, following discussions with executives representing the pharmaceutical company, the European Union's Health Commissioner, Stella Kyriakides, tweeted, "Discussions with AstraZeneca today resulted in dissatisfaction with a lack of clarity and insufficient explanations from the company. European Union member states are united. Vaccine developers have societal and contractual responsibilities they need to uphold. With our member states, we have requested from AstraZeneca a detailed planning of vaccine deliveries and when distribution will take place to member states. Another meeting will be convened on Wednesday to discuss the matter further." The development has raised pressure on the Commission, just as it is being criticized for the slow rollout of vaccination programs in European Union member states in comparison with the United Kingdom and the United States. The United Kingdom has administered more than 10 doses per 100 residents, but according to data gathered by Airfinity, a London-based life sciences analytics company, the European Union has administered just under 2 doses per 100 residents. The EU Health Commissioner Stella Kyriakides said Brussels would now insist on being notified of any exports of vaccines from EU sites, including that produced by Pfizer, on which the United Kingdom is reliant on European laboratories for supplies, raising the spectre of an export ban. Kyriakides said, "You know that AstraZeneca vaccine is currently in the final stages of approval with the European Medicines Agency. If all requirements are met, the European Medicines Agency could recommend market authorization by the end of this week. But there is a problem in the supply side. Last Friday, the company, AstraZeneca, surprisingly informed the European Commission and the European Union member states that it intends to supply considerably fewer doses of the vaccine in the coming weeks than agreed and announced. This new schedule is not acceptable to the European Union, That is why I wrote a letter to the company at the weekend in which I asked important and serious questions. The European Union has pre-financed the development of the vaccine and its production and wants to see the return. The EU Health Commissioner, Stella Kyriakides, said the European Union wanted to know exactly which doses have been produced, where by AstraZeneca so far, and if or to whom they have been delivered. These questions were also discussed today in the Joint Steering Board of the Commission and the 27 member states with AstraZeneca, she said. The answers of the company have not been satisfactory so far. That's why a second meeting is scheduled for tonight. The European Union wants the order and pre-financed doses to be delivered as soon as possible, and we want our contract to be fully fulfilled. The European Union has spent 2.7 billion euros on the rapid development and production of coronavirus vaccines. The European Union's Health Commissioner, Stella Kyriakides, said the Commission had proposed that the Member States agreed on an export transparency mechanism be put in place as soon as possible. Meanwhile, Germany's Health Minister, Jens Spahn, gave Berlin's backing to the Commission proposal. We, as the European Union, must be able to know whether and what vaccines are being exported from the European Union, he said. Only that way can we understand whether our European Union contracts with the producers are being served fairly. An obligation to get approval for vaccine exports on the European Union level makes sense. AstraZeneca said in a statement that the company's chief executive, in his conversation with Ursula von der Leyen, had stressed the importance of working in partnership and how AstraZeneca is doing everything it can to bring its vaccine to millions of Europeans as soon as possible.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio. Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
You are our true God.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all over the world, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode from series of The Last Savior from IRIB English Radio and our discussion concerning the doubts or misconceptions on this very important topic. For this cause, we have invited Islamic researcher Sheikh Murtada Karimi from Qom Seminary Schools to help us answer the questions that we pose in this series of shows. Sheikh Murtada, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me.
Sheikhuna, the question of the day on another misconception or doubt on the topic of Mahdawi or Mahdism is that it is being said that Shias did not have any political power from the, let's say, the time of the Holy Prophet till then, and they wanted to create an opportunity for themselves. That's why they forged this idea of birth of Mahdi, and also they also forged the concept of riba, occultation, in order to make some power at the time that there was nothing for them in leading the society. This baseless doubt and misconception, again, can be looked at in a way that we have seen that at the time of first and second Imam, the Imams were in power, but due to some issues, they were the leaders of the Islamic Ummah, but they were not as the ruler or caliphs of the time. So, Sheikh, how can we look at this doubt and misconception?
Of course, this Wahhabi scholar wants to say that before the year 255 or 260, when Imam Mahdi alayhi salam was born or Imam Askari alayhi salam was martyred, the Shia did not have any access to power. And then some of the followers and some of the companions of Imam Askari alayhi salam, they said that it's good for us to forge a concept like occultation and claim that our Imam is in occultation, and in future, finally one day he will come back and we will gain the power.
Yeah.
And so forging the concept of occultation was an answer to this political disappointment of the Shia.
True.
Now, as you mentioned, first of all, this is not the case. I mean, when it comes to the Shia, at least at the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam and Imam Hassan alayhi salam, these two Imams were in power. So we cannot claim that the Shia and the Shia Imams did not have any power before Imam al-Askari alayhi salam and Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam. And secondly, I would like to answer this Wahhabi scholar if he agrees with the rulings of those Abbasid and Umayyad caliphs. I mean, somehow, maybe he wants to say that through all these years, the power was in the hands of the Sunni and not the Shia. And my question is that, do you agree and do you confirm all the acts done by the Umayyad caliphs, like from Yazid ibn Muawiyah, who killed Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, and the next caliphs and all those cruel and oppressive Abbasid caliphs?
They will say yes.
Not all of them. I mean, when...
Because they, for example, as the as the case of Yazid, they will say that he was an... he was a scholar, he did ijtihad, and he was wrong in his ijtihad.
This is the
worst answer that can ever be said.
The great majority of Sunni scholars, they do not say that.
But even the same doubt cannot be even issued by a Sunni scholar, rather a Wahhabi one. So this also would be the answer from a Wahhabi sheikh, right?
No, my point is that even the Wahhabi scholars and the great majority of the Sunni scholars, let me mention by giving you the example of the hadith of Esnai Ashar Khalifa, there will be 12 caliphs after me.
Right.
We know that
in Bukhari, in the book of Al-Istikhlaf.
Yeah, this narration has been mentioned in various Sunni sources.
يَكُنُوا بَعْدِ أَثْنَا عَشَرَ خَلِيفَةً كُلُّهُمْ مِنْ قُرَيْشِ.
We have different versions, and yes, the gist of the narration is that there will be 12 caliphs after me.
True.
Now, when we study the Sunni books to tell us who are these 12 people, we cannot find any convincing answer. Because of the fact that these Sunni scholars, they say that, okay, we have four caliphs, four Rashidun caliphs, and then Muawiyah, these are five, and Umar ibn Abdul Aziz,
they can
six.
Never be reached to 12.
But they do not, they also do not consider people like Yazid, like Marwan ibn Hakam, like Mansur Abbasi, like Safah, like Harun al-Rashid, they do not include them in these 12 caliphs. So this means that at least the great majority of the Sunni scholars, they do not believe in most of the Umayyad caliphs and the Abbasid caliphs as the true successors after the Holy Prophet.
True.
even we have like Ibn al-Kathir, who is a very anti-Shia scholar, even, I mean, he is not able to mention 12 people out of all these Umayyad and Abbasid caliphs. One of the Sunni scholars mentions some, I mean, possibilities for this narration, and finally he says that وَلَمْ أَعْلَمْ لِلْحَدِيثَ مَعْنَى. Finally, I was not able to justify this narration, and maybe it is a forged narration, which is not the case.
But
so my point is that we cannot claim that majority of the Sunni scholars approve the acts of the Umayyad and the Abbasid caliphs.
That's true.
So the next point is that what is mentioned by this Wahhabi scholar is the same thing which is mentioned by anti-Islam scholars, by non-Muslim scholars, against the concept of Mahdism.
True.
They say that Muslims have brought about and they have forged the concept of Mahdism because of the fact that they did not have, they are wishing for future. They have political problems, so always they are somehow condoling themselves by saying that in the future we will have a promised Mahdi and he will have the power, and the power will be in the hands of the Muslims. My point is that what is mentioned by this Wahhabi scholar is against the concept of Mahdism, which is shared by both Shia and Sunnis. If he is telling the Shia that you forged the concept of Mahdism and occultation because of the fact that you did not have power and you wanted the power in the future, we say that, oh brother, you are negating the whole concept of Mahdism. What you are mentioning is what is mentioned by non-Muslims against the concept of Mahdism. So many people can claim that Mahdism is wrong because Muslims, till now, they did not have enough power to rule the whole world. And because of that, they claim that in future we will have a promised Mahdi. He will come, he will fill the earth with justice, and the only religion over the world will be Islam. All the people will be Muslim, and it is, the time that all the Muslims are wishing for. This is the second answer.
Wherever you be, I'll be with you, 'cause you're the one.
Answer is that if this analysis of this Wahhabi scholar is true, and I mean, as he mentioned, he claimed that the Shia, they forged the concept of Mahdism and occultation because of the political issues, the answer is that the cure and solution for this problem was the concept of Mahdism and not the occultation and the riba.
True.
So my point is that the Shia could overcome this political problem by coming of an imam who will fill the earth with justice, and that is Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. They did not need the concept of occultation and riba for that. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
The point is that the answer for this political problem is the coming of an imam who will have the power. It could be in future. So Shia did not need the concept of occultation and riba for this problem.
But he already negated the concept of the birth of Mahdi. So if there is no Mahdi, so he paved the way. Slowly, slowly he comes to this conclusion.
Yeah, this
he first says that there is no Mahdi first. There is no Mahdi. Then, in case they insist on having, for example, occultation or, I don't know, the concept of expecting the Mahdi, it is just because of these, let's say, political deficiencies that they have up to now.
You're right. But my point is that this third answer should be taken into consideration as a separate answer from the previous ones.
Yeah.
So put aside all the other answers,
true,
the fact that the Shia believes in Imam Mahdi and in his birth, Let's say that Shia have a political disappointment, a political problem, and they need to have power in future.
True.
The answer, this third answer, regardless of those answers of belief in 12 imams and the narrations and so on and so forth, this answer is telling us that if it was the reason, the solution for it is coming of an imam to give you the power, not the occultation of an imam and waiting for him for a long, long time. So the answer is telling that if this is the case, what could solve the problem of the Shia was that, for example, in future, a person will be born, like the belief of the Sunnis. And he will give us the power. Because this Wahhabi scholar says that this is the philosophy of the concept of occultation and ghiba. My point in this answer is that if this is the case, the solution could be the concept of Mahdism in future. A person will come in future and he will have the power for the Shia.
Yeah, we can also tell him, okay, no problem. Let's say that Mahdi was not yet born. So a Mahdi will come in future. True?
That's true.
At least we are in common with each other that a Mahdi will come. So this is the element of power for us then.
And that is why, as I mentioned in the second answer, if we accept this point by this Wahhabi scholar, it is against the concept of Mahdism.
Very true.
As believed by all Shia and Sunnis, all Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not only against the concept of Mahdism as viewed by the Shia.
Okay, thank you, Sheikh Murtada, for your enlightenment on the topic and actually the reasoning that you have brought up. Look, brothers and sisters, the question of the day was that concept of intidar, occultation, and talking about two different phases, minor and major occultation of Mahdi. It is being said that it was due to political deficiencies that Shias have in the course of history, and they have created this. So the answer that was provided, one of the answers that I want to mention at the end of the show is that Sheikh Murtada referred to, is that occultation by itself brings no power to us. If there is going to be a Mahdi, the last savior to come, this would be the, let's say, the element of power. And in that case, we and you, the person who makes this doubt and misconception, are in common. So we all believe that a Mahdi will come, regardless of his birth, whether we want to discuss it or not. No, suppose that Mahdi has not yet been born. So this beautiful answer was given by Sheikh Murtada at the end of the session. And hopefully we'll be able to discuss other doubts and misconceptions in the upcoming sessions on The Last Savior from IRRB English Radio. Thanks again for staying tuned. Be blessed. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. O Allah, protect your representative, Al-Hujjab bin al-Hasan, Imam al-Mahdi, and send salutation upon him and his ancestors, now as well as all the times. Be his guardian, protector, guide and assistance. Help him in his path and be watchful for him till you let him rule over the earth willingly and cause him to live in it for a long time.
Limelight.
The leadership of the Proud Boys has come under increased scrutiny as agents and prosecutors across the United States try to determine how closely members of the far-right nationalist group communicated during the riot at the Capitol this month, and to what extent they might have planned the assault in advance, according to federal law enforcement officials. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Alan Feuer and Francis Robles. The piece is titled, Proud Boys Under Growing Scrutiny in Capitol Riot Investigation. Stay with us for more of Alan Feuer and Francis Robles' article. The leadership of the Proud Boys has come under increased scrutiny as agents and prosecutors across the United States try to determine how closely members of the far-right nationalist group communicated during the riot at the Capitol this month, and to what extent they might have planned the assault in advance, according to federal law enforcement officials. At least six members of the organization have been charged in connection with the riot, including one of its top-ranking leaders, Joseph Biggs. Mr. Biggs, a U.S. Army veteran, led about 100 men on an angry march from the site of President Donald J. Trump's speech towards and then into the Capitol building. The Proud Boys, who have a history of scuffling with left-wing anti-fascist activists, have long been some of Donald Trump's most vocal and violent supporters, and he has returned the favor, telling them during one of the presidential debates to stand back and stand by. Along with the right-wing militia, the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys was one of the extreme groups with a large presence at the Capitol incursion, investigators said. Despite having launched one of the most sprawling inquiries in American history, investigators have yet to unearth clear-cut evidence suggesting there was a widespread conspiracy to assault the Capitol building on Wednesday, 6th of January. Still in recent days, they have turned their attention towards a pair of Proud Boy organizers on the West Coast and have started executing a series of search warrants connected to the group, a federal law enforcement official said, speaking on the condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to discuss an ongoing inquiry. One of the organizers of Proud Boys, Ethan Nordine, of Auburn, Washington State, appeared with Mr. Biggs in a YouTube video on the day Donald Trump's rally and can be seen shouting orders to a group of Proud Boys through a bullhorn. Ethan Nordine, also known as Rufio Panman, investigators said, is named in Mr. Biggs's criminal complaint but has not been charged himself. The second Proud Boy organizer, Eddie Block, of Madera, California, took video of Mr. Biggs and Mr. Nordine during the event in Washington, according to a photograph included in Mr. Biggs's charging documents. In an hour-long YouTube video that he live-streamed this weekend, Mr. Block acknowledged that about 25 federal agents swooped down on his house on Friday, seizing two of his cell phones, a laptop, an iPad, an Xbox, and an old computer. When reached by phone on Tuesday, 26th of January, Mr. Block declined to comment further on the federal investigation. Mr. Nordine could not be reached for comment. The FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, has acknowledged that it is conducting a similarly serious inquiry into the Oath Keepers. Oath Keepers are a group of largely composed of law enforcement and military personnel, and also the Three Percenters, which emerged from the extremist wing of the gun rights movement. Several members of both organizations have already been charged in connection with a Capitol attack, including three defendants who stand accused of the most severe conspiracy allegations leveled so far. FBI investigators involved in the Capitol attack have also focused their attention on the chairman of the Proud Boys, Enrique Tarrio. Mr. Tarrio, who lives in Miami, Florida, was scheduled to attend the march in Washington, but was thrown out of the city by a judge the day before it happened. When he was arrested on 4th of January in connection with the burning of a Black Lives Matter banner that had been torn from a historic black church during a different round of violent protests last month, police officers found he was carrying two high-capacity rifle magazines emblazoned with the Proud Boys chicken logo. Prosecutors have noted in documents attached to Mr. Biggs's case that Mr. Tarrio first began encouraging the Proud Boys to go to Washington for the Stop the Steal march in late December, when he posted a message on the social media app Parler announcing that members of the group would turn out in record numbers. In the run-up to the rally, Mr. Tarrio also used Parler to urge his members to avoid wearing their traditional black and yellow polo shirts, but instead to go incognito and move about the city in smaller teams, prosecutors say. In an interview with the New York Times 1 week after the siege, Enrique Tarrio, who took over the Proud Boys from its founder, Gavin McInnes, said that the attack on the Capitol was misguided, and that anyone who broke windows or took part in the nearly 140 assaults on police officers should be prosecuted. He tried to minimize the role that the Proud Boys played in the attack on the Capitol building, even though among the 150 people charged so far, prosecutors have brought charges against Nicholas Oakes, the leader of the group's Hawaii chapter, and Nicholas DiCarlo, one of the top media figures. Dominic Pezzola, a Proud Boy from Rochester, New York, was in the first wave of rioters to breach the Capitol, prosecutors say, and stands accused of shattering a window with a plastic police riot shield. Obviously, they didn't help our cause, Enrique Tarrio said. Investigators are continuing to sift through online posts and messages by Enrique Tarrio and by Mr. Biggs in an effort to determine if they showed any attempt at coordination or planning of the attack on the Capitol building, according to federal law enforcement officials. On the day of the attack, Enrique Tarrio took to Parler, calling members of the Proud Boys who took part in its revolutionaries and urged them not to leave. "For now, I'm enjoying the show," he wrote, adding, "Do what must be done." While investigators are increasingly focused on people who may have pre-planned the attack, any evidence that the assault on the Capitol building was organized in advance could be a factor in Donald Trump's second impeachment trial, scheduled for early February in the U.S. Senate. House Democrats have accused the former president of inciting the riot, which led to the deaths of five people, including one Capitol police officer. Several defendants have said they joined the siege following Donald Trump's orders. But if proof emerges that groups like the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers plotted in it in the days before it happened, it could undermine some arguments that Donald Trump is entirely to blame. On the other hand, evidence could end up showing that any pre-planned attack was inspired by weeks of the former president's insistence that the election was rigged.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Thank you. youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The big and overwhelming problems of American society.
This is part of a televised speech delivered on July 31st, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
We should notice that the big problems that have engulfed our main enemy is the U.S. government and regime, are not comparable to ours. They are tens of times bigger than ours. In the present time, the Americans have been surrounded by various problems. On the one hand, class inequalities have widened in a surprising manner, and on the other hand, there is racial discrimination which has reared its ugly head, and it has made everyone line up against the U.S. system. Moreover, there are insolvable economic problems. It has been reported that 45 million people are unemployed in that country. This is a very important figure and a strange phenomena in that country. We can also refer to the managerial problems which showed themselves on the issue of the coronavirus. These are the U.S. problems.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
Behavior of their cruel police is another indication of managerial problems. In other words, the management of social issues in that country has panned out in a way that they cannot prevent a police officer from torturing someone to death in a savage way and in front of people. They cannot put an end to these killings. This indicates the existence of grave managerial problems which have caused the U.S. to be hated and to become isolated at an international level. The fire under the ashes has blazed again. They might be able to suppress and extinguish the movements launched in the middle of the streets, but the fire under the ashes will linger and will become ablaze again.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
around the world with reporters.
The UK government is mulling over plans to put some travelers coming to England in so-called quarantine hotels amid concerns about new variants of the virus.
As we vaccinate more people, it becomes more and more important that we protect against any new variants coming in. Once you have that protection and you don't have new variants in the country, you should protect against them.
Despite the high death toll, case numbers in the UK are slowly falling thanks to the lockdown. But the government is facing mounting pressure over when the restrictions, among them school closures, will be eased. As for the rest of Europe, well, they're worried about an outbreak of the so-called British variant within their borders.
Different European countries have different measures in place, lockdowns, curfews, but with their healthcare systems under immense pressure, they may have to enforce even stricter measures soon.
But the restrictions of freedoms already in place are testing people's patience. In the Netherlands, at least 150 people arrested Monday during unrest and looting in towns and cities across the country over an 8 p.m. curfew.
Het heeft ook niks te maken wat we zagen met strijden voor de vrijheid. We nemen al deze maatregelen.
What we saw has nothing to do with fighting for freedom. We didn't take all these measures for fun. We did so because we are fighting against the virus, and it's the virus which is actually robbing our freedom.
While the UK heads towards its mid-February target of 15 million vaccinations, across the EU, growing frustration with the pace of immunization. Last week, AstraZeneca told the EU it was falling behind on its supply target because of production problems. The EU Commission, in charge of approving and procuring the jabs, isn't happy.
This new schedule is not acceptable to the European Union. The European Union has pre-financed the development of the vaccine and its production and wants to see the return.
The delays will make it harder for the EU to meet its plan to vaccinate 70% of its adult population by late summer, leading to a deepening of the crisis across the bloc. The UK and European Union have survived Brexit and the financial lockdown of 2008. But it remains to be seen if they will survive COVID-19. Saeed Pariza, London.
Iranian Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif made a stop in Moscow for talks with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov on mutual and international issues. In a joint press conference, Zarif said Iran will take proper action whenever the United States lifts the sanctions to pave the way for its return to the 2015 nuclear deal.
What we have heard from the United States administration so far has mostly been in the form of words and announcements of its position. However, it is actions that we respond to.
For his part, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Moscow and Iran share the same position on how to preserve the historic deal, adding that it was up to the United States to take the first steps by removing the sanctions.
Both we and Iran are deeply interested in a full return of signatory states to fulfilling their obligations under the accord.
The top Iranian diplomat said Trump's departure brought along special circumstances that required Tehran and Moscow to coordinate their positions in this regard.
Our focus today was on the Caucasus and the regional efforts for bringing peace and stability in the Caucasus, because I am right now engaged in a regional trip to countries in the Caucasus, plus Russia and Turkey. We also had a major discussion about global situation and how we can revive the nuclear deal.
With the election of Joseph Biden, hopes for a more balanced approach from Washington and a return to the nuclear deal have been revived.
If this happens, and we hope that we'll be able to achieve such a result, then of course the relations between Iran and the Russian Federation will benefit, since they will be removed from illegitimate, illegal unilateral sanctions, both from the United States and from a number of other countries.
Zarif arrived in Moscow after paying a visit to Azerbaijan, where he sat down with Azeri President Ilham Aliyev. Iran and Russia said they are determined to expand mutual ties and continue cooperation in regional stability and international security. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Italy's Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte tendered his resignation, throwing Italy into a government crisis in the midst of a pandemic that has devastated the country. More than 85,000 lives have been lost to coronavirus as Italy's economy is falling deeper into chaos. After surviving two confidence votes last week, Conte has reportedly decided to quit because his executive risked being defeated in a vote over a contested report on the justice system in the Senate, where he no longer has an absolute majority.
President of the Republic Sergio Mattarella received this morning the President of the Council of Ministers Giuseppe Conte, who handed in the resignation of the government that he presides. The President of the Republic has decided to invite the government to remain in charge to handle the current affairs.
The government was plunged into crisis after former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi pulled his junior partner Italia Viva out of the ruling coalition on January 13. Renzi had withdrawn his support over issues including differences on the COVID-19 recovery plan and the handling of the coronavirus outbreak. Conte is now expected to seek a third mandate from the President of the Republic, Sergio Mattarella, to form a new executive with a broader coalition. Should he fail to do so, Mattarella may decide to bring in a new prime minister or call for snap elections.
La risposta è molto semplice.
I'm going to make this very simple. This political crisis will result in more interest to be paid by Rome on its public debt due to an increase of the spread between Italy and Germany's 10-year yields. Whoever becomes prime minister next will have to implement tough reforms, including slashing health and social spending, in order to access the resources allocated in the EU's recovery fund.
On Wednesday, Italy's head of state, Mattarella, is slated to start a round of formal consultations with party leaders and other institutional figures to see whether a new coalition can be formed.
It isn't certain where this political crisis will lead. What is certain is that not even the world's worst pandemic in a century has persuaded the Italian politicians to remain united to face an unprecedented health crisis together. After the collapse of 66 governments in just 75 years of democracy, the country's future is now in the hands of President Mattarella. Max Civili, Rome.
Streets were deserted, shops were closed, and businesses were abandoned in Indian-controlled Kashmir as India celebrated its 72nd Republic Day.
What is there for the people of Kashmir to celebrate? Our special status was stripped, and so were our rights. The promises that were made were just a show-off. Our jobs, our land, and our opportunities are on sale. So what should I celebrate?
Amid suspended internet services and heightened security arrangements,